Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashlyn Dave, your host. We've got a great show lined up, so let's get started. All right, this is Ashlyn Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 137. It's the week of September 1st, 2011, and I'd like to welcome you to the show. Appreciate you downloading it, listening to it streaming, however you're getting the show. I certainly appreciate you taking the time to listen. Got a multi-topic show this week, and I think you're really going to like it because I'm going to hit on several different things. If you're familiar with Central Virginia at all, you'll know that we had an earthquake this week. And we also had a hurricane this week, and that made for some interesting experiences. First time I'd ever experienced an earthquake, specifically that happened on August 23rd. And then, of course, we just had Hurricane Irene come through over the weekend of the Patrick Henry Half Marathon. So I'll explain how all that worked together, and unfortunately, I'm not going to have a report from the Annapolis 10-miler because that was canceled, and I'll talk a little bit about that. Let's see. I'm also going to talk a little bit about overcoaching and what I think that is, and the concept and principle of generalized reciprocity and how all these things work together with running, distance running. And I'm going to throw a little bit of Star Trek in there and wrap it all up with some duct tape, duct tape story. Let's see if I can figure out how to get all these different topics together in one podcast and have it make sense. All right, let's talk about the earthquake. For the first time I've ever experienced an earthquake that I can remember. I think when I was a child, I may have experienced one, according to my mom. Either that may or may not, I'm not sure. I was born in San Leandro, California, which, there's earthquakes out there. And in talking with my mom, I may have experienced one as an infant. I'm not sure. I can't remember what she told me when I asked her about that. But on August 23rd, I definitely experienced one. And, everybody who did experience that, everybody has their own story. So I'll tell mine real quick just because it's kind of interesting. Well, it's not really interesting. It's just, you remember where you were. I was sitting in the lobby of the Hanover County Circuit Court here in about 5 miles to the east of the center of the universe, and felt this. First of all, it felt like the boiler in the basement was coming on or rumbling, but then it got harder, harder and louder, and the whole room was shaking. The whole lobby was shaking, and after maybe 2 seconds, I realized that it was an earthquake because there was no other explanation, and I just kind of said earthquake out loud. Everybody in the lobby at that point was filing out. Everybody was having a different reaction. One lady started crying. So we went right out the front doors, and I looked over to the left, and there's three flagpoles there that are between the circuit court building and the general district court building, and they were violently shaking, large flagpoles, and the wind wasn't blowing. So it was really an interesting, weird experience. Weirdest thing about it, though, was once we walked outside on the sidewalk, I didn't feel it anymore. I just felt it when I was in the building, yet the flagpoles were still violently shaking. So it was very strange. And like I said, there was one woman had gotten very upset. And I don't know what she was thinking, but there's always those that think it's the last day and it's Armageddon or whatever. But anyway, as it turns out, the epicenter is what it's called, of the earthquake was 34 miles. Almost 40 miles from where I was at the courthouse area, northwest in Mineral, Virginia. And most people who saw any news footage of the earthquake and were told, if you watch the national news and you were told that the center of the earthquake was, several miles beneath Mineral, Virginia, you're probably thinking, well, where's Mineral, Virginia? Well, it's in Louisa County. It's about 34 miles from Ashland. It was 40 miles from where I was. And I already knew where Mineral was because they have a great bluegrass festival there every year, so, which I've been to. They get some real big names there. But other than that, it's just a small town in Louisa County. And, you know, it's I don't even think, I think it's smaller than Ashland, as a matter of fact. I'm not really sure. I don't even know how many people live in Mineral. But it's a nice area out there, and apparently there was some damage to some old buildings. So we didn't experience any damage here. I came home, the house was fine. It wasn't really, you know, nothing else really to say about it. And then there was some aftershocks that I never felt any aftershocks. Now, my wife was in downtown Richmond at a doctor's office on, I think, the 10th floor or something like that. Or maybe not the 10th floor, a couple floors up. And she felt the building shaking, and she said it was swaying. My mother-in-law lives on the 10th floor. That's why I was thinking about the 10th floor in a retirement home. And my daughter was down there with her, but they were not up on the 10th floor. They were down in the lobby doing a jigsaw puzzle. And all my daughter heard was a bunch of boom sounds. And so she didn't really know what it was. And she didn't feel the shaking, I guess, as much as we did. But anyway, that was interesting. First time that ever happened I was able to feel it. Apparently, we've had earthquakes out here before, very small ones, but this one was definitely, it was weird. It was a weird experience. Some people who in the podcast, in my listener audience, might have experienced earthquakes before, but I have not, and it was definitely weird and definitely something I don't want to repeat. And I want to thank, I think it's Christina and Abuelo that checked in on me. I appreciate that. I'll get the email back section of the show a little bit later. So anyway, that was the earthquake, and then, of course, the hurricane came through Saturday afternoon, late morning, and my goal, I've been talking about this in the podcast, I was going to run the Patrick Henry Half Marathon on the 27th, and then on the 28th, run the Annapolis 10-miler. Well, the Thursday before this weekend, the Annapolis 10-miler was canceled due to the weather, and I kept waiting on the Patrick Henry Half Marathon, what the deal was with that, because Dr. Smitty was coming up from Chesapeake with the sun, and we were going to all run it, and, you know, so I didn't want them to have to make the trip if they're going to cancel, but that race went on. It started at 7 a.m. Saturday morning, 27th of August, and it rained, and it was windy, but the storm did not come through till much later in the day, and boy, it came through. So let's kind of segue into the Patrick Henry race report, which I'm going to say a little piece about overcoaching. The route was changed this year, or not the course wasn't changed necessarily. The start finish was. The start finish was moved from Poor Farm Park, which was an impossible parking nightmare, as well as getting people to the race on time, because there's only one way to get into that park. It was moved from there to the campus, well, not really, to the campus of Randolph-Macon College here in Ashland. And right on North Center Street along the railroad tracks was the start-finish. And it was an outstanding decision that was made, and it was a great event. My hat's off to Michael George and sports backers and the Richmond Roadrunners and the other race organizers and local officials that all came to the decision to change the start-finish. What it did is, in my opinion, it accomplished two things. One, it got rid of the bottlenecking at the beginning of the old route, where the whole race started on a road and then it went into a narrow fire road through woods before it opened back up on the road again. And it really bottlenecked going into the woods because the trail was about as wide for one vehicle, and it's hard to get, you know, a lot of people through there, and because you can't really run past people. You just have to, either you get out in front or you're kind of screwed till you get back out on the road. The second thing it did was made the whole gathering of the race much more scenic. And what I mean is, if you can imagine, pretty much exactly what we had at the railroad run, people congregating along the railroad tracks, running along the railroad track, which is so characteristic of this little town that we live in. And I personally think it made for a great event, just bringing it out and putting it on the campus. And there was no problem getting to the race. I actually walked from my house, me, Dr. Smitty, and his son. We walked from my house to the start, which is a half mile. you know, pretty relaxing, and ended up walking home. So we get up there, and you know, those port-a-john lines were really, really long. So I was glad that I lived really close. And race started right at 7 o'clock, and I did a run 8 minutes, walk two for the whole race, and finished in 2:17, which was 3 minutes better than the goal I'd set out for myself. Now, there was a real possibility that I was going to have trouble during this race because I had not trained up to the half marathon or even close to the half marathon mark. I did one 10-miler, and that was during some real humid times where I walked a lot of that. So I didn't really feel like I had half marathon fitness. Now, I did. I made my time goal, and I felt really good at the end, and I was actually very pleased with my overall effort based on my fitness level and my ability level. I was a little disappointed when I found out that I came in 97th place out of 116 for my age group, which is 40 to 44. I didn't really think I was that far back in my age group. That did surprise me a little bit. It was good for a 10:29 overall pace. There were 1,063 finishers total, and I came in 758th place out of 1,063 finishers, which is, you know, kind of towards the back of the pack. It's not a middle of the pack, right? It's kind of a back of the pack. You know, so what? I had a good time. I got my finisher's medal. A little disappointed in the shirt. You know, I get extra large. I tried it on when I got home after, you know, race number pickup, and it's not the extra larges that I'm used to, so I'm not even sure if I'll wear it. But I do like the new logo. It's got the town clock incorporated into the logo, not on the medal, but on the shirt, because we have a really cool town clock at the train station in Ashland, real, you know, old-time looking kind of thing. And anyways, good, just overall good event, had a good time. Dr. Smitty and his son made his time goal, and they'll be running the Rock and Roll Labor Day weekend down in Virginia Beach. The nip guards were definitely needed. Got absolutely drenched in the rain. I wore a hat to keep the rain from hitting me in the face, but what was happening is my pants got so water soaked that you know, everything was heavy. Nothing wicks in the rain, and but I really liked the route. The only difference was that the big half-mile hill was at the end, and that was no problem for me because that's my hill. That's what I do hill repeats on. So I'm used to that hill. I like the overall route. It's beautiful. It goes through the town, and it goes through some farms, and it just has some beautiful scenery, and I think it was an overall great event. Now, let me talk a little bit about overcoaching. Several years ago, I was one of the Patrick Henry Half Marathon coaches for the Ashland YMCA. It was sports backers and Richwood Roadrunners, you know, put together training teams, and I was one of the volunteer coaches. I had a real good time doing that. Basically, what you do is you coach, get everybody up to that distance, and then you, let them go on race day. You know, that's their day, and that's kind of what a running coach does, in my opinion, is that you don't run with your people out on the course. You coach them, get them ready for the race, and then it's an individual sport. It's not a team sport. Well, this is what I have to say about overcoaching, and I might, you know, there's a risk here of offending some people in the listening audience because some of you may do this. I'm not sure, but this is how I'm just going to give you my perspective from a user. During there were two things that happened during the race that I thought were kind of silly. One, I don't know what the lady's name was. She's wearing all black. She comes running up past everybody, the group that I was with, just the kind of the pack of people I was running with. And she was saying, way to work it, way to work it. And, I turned to see, try to figure out who she's talking to. And I think she's just talking to anybody. And then I saw this person again later, and I figured it out pretty quick that this was one of the half marathon training team coaches. Now, I don't know if she was coaching me when she was telling me, way to work it. But, when I'm out there running, I'm doing my thing. I'm not working anything. And I certainly don't need any advice or coaching from anybody while I'm out on the road because I don't have a coach. I do my own training. If I look for any advice, I usually talk to other people. The only time I've ever had anybody come out and run with me was during the ultra marathons when I just needed some, basically, to make sure I made the cutoffs, and that's what I've done in the past. Now, but I don't have, I would never say that to anybody, way to work it, or work it, or, you know, way to work it, because to me, it's a, I kind of felt like this person had a feeling of superiority over the people that she was running past. And the funny thing about it was, I knew this person was a coach because I saw her standing up, just talking to people. You know, she would run way up ahead and then stop and talk, and then, and she had a race number on. I don't even remember what the number was. I would have looked it up at least to see what her name was. But I think she looked kind of silly the way she was yelling at people that clearly she didn't know. And even if she was yelling at people that she knew, I just think it's strange to coach as a participant. And that's, again, might, at the risk of alienating any listeners out there or offending anyone, which, you know, if that happens, that does. This is just my opinion. If you're going to coach, then don't participate. If you're going to participate, don't coach. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. That's just my opinion as a podcaster and an endurance runner. Second part happened there at the top of the hill coming up Blunt's Bridge Road, which is around mile 11 and a half to 12 of the course. There was a guy, you know, this is a long hill. It's about half a mile, and it's kind of like a two-step hill. There was a guy saying that the course flattened out in 100 meters up at a sign. And, you know, that was nice that he was saying that. It's not necessary. And it's kind of like you're almost there. You don't ever say that to a distance runner because, you know, or a little, just a little farther to go. That's another thing you don't say. You just don't, you know, almost there. You know, when you're almost there is when you can see the finish line. That's when you're almost there, when you see the finish line. You know, the thing, the canopy across the finishing mats. That's when you're almost there, when you can actually see it. When you can't see it, you're not almost there, in my opinion. Anyway, this guy was, you know, telling everybody where the course flattened out, and I'm like, yo, dumbass, you know, this is my hill. This is where I do my hill repeats. I know the course. I live here. I know where it flattens out. You really don't need to tell people where the hill flattens out. If someone's so awful and they need that information, they can just walk. You know, when you walk up a hill, it's just as bad, just as good as it being flat. I don't know. That kind of bothered me too. I don't know. Maybe I'm overreacting a little bit, but I don't know. It's just, I'm just sharing my opinion about some of the funny things you see out there on the course. All right, got so anyway, that's over coaching. Really, I don't think you need to have a coach out there running with everybody. You know, if you're going to participate, don't coach. If you're going to coach, don't participate. And you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with standing on the sideline, you know, saying, you know, you're looking good, you know, way to go, good job, runners, you know, go runners. To me, those are good cheers. But to be running alongside of people telling them, you know, way to work it, I just think is stupid. That's just me. Okay, so that was the Patrick Henry. One other observation. During the beginning of the race, of course, you know, you're always walking around seeing who you know there. Saw lots of folks I knew. And then this one guy was walked down, and he was wearing a white singlet, and it was tucked into his shorts really, really, like, really tight, like, pulled in really tight. And I just remember thinking, God, that guy sure got his tank top tucked in really tight. And then he had some shorts on, and it looked like he had some white, the white spandex compression shorts on underneath his running shorts. And then I was with somebody, and they said, oh, he's probably wearing a onesie. So, you know, what goes through a guy's mind in the morning when he puts on a onesie? I don't know. You know, onesie for babies. And we were wondering if the snaps were in the crotch or not. So that was pretty funny. How to run half marathon without really training. That's what I did. Actually, I found it fairly easy. Felt good on the running portions and just took my two-minute breathers. Carried no water source. I just drank water off the course. I did have one Cliff Bar over the course of the morning because I couldn't find any goose in my house. And it was so humid. It was 94% humidity out there in the 80s. Brutal. just brutal heat, and then and the rain and the wind did not really help but so much. Although at the end got a little chilly because I was soaking wet, and then of course I walked home and got a little chilly. So lots of people that I knew there, and someone listened to the show: Peter, Rodney, Tom, Ben, Tara, Steph, Kelly, Greta, Matt, Joanne, Tamara, Susan. Saw Michael Pulley from Richard Roadrunners, and then of course I saw Snuggy Bear and Crash Kreider at one of the turns. They were volunteering as race marshals, so certainly appreciate them being out there, and all the people running the water stops. Everything went really well, and it just made me very pleased to be part of this event. And that was my fifth year running it. I've run all of them, and it's kind of cool because the medal was a little bit different this year, so now so that way I don't have five of the same. Well, actually, out of the five medals, three are identical. So it's nice to have a different type of medal now. Still a little disappointed in my finishing place. I just didn't think I was that far back in my age group. I have not looked at the whole age group yet to see how competitive I would have been had I had half marathon fitness, which for me, half marathon fitness is around, it's a 205 to 210 half marathon, around 10-minute miles is general, and just under is what I would like to be able to do for the half marathon. But now that I'm running distances longer than that, I don't really seek out the two-hour half marathon as much as I used to. Although my PR for the half marathon is just under 2 hours. So anyway, that was the idea of the overcoaching, and I would definitely, if you want to contact me about that or comment on that, if you have had a similar situation, you can do that at ashlanddave@gmail.com. That gets you in, and I always respond to all emails. So if you want to comment on that or start a dialogue, I'll be happy to do that at ashlanddave@gmail.com. Okay, let's talk about the hurricane. I got home from the race, and I already had my generator all ready to go. Had numerous gallons of gas and a couple gas cans. Had the lantern in the house, flashlights, extra flashlights, extra batteries. You know, pretty much was waiting for the power to go out. Power never went out. kept waiting for the power to go out. Power never went out. It flickered a few times. Even heard a sonic boom outside, which you associate with a transformer blowing up. Power never went out. We have direct TV. That kept going in and out. And then when that would go out, I would flip to the antenna and get the regular network TVs through the digital antenna, and then that would have some trouble too. But it was enough for us to keep up with the weather, and boy, we got walloped big time. And it was not back in 2003, we suffered through Tropical Storm Isabel, which knocked the power out in where I used to live out in the county for 10 days. That was a pain in the ass, but it's funny how quickly you get used to a different lifestyle when you have, and how patient you get when you have absolutely no control over them. You can't call up and demand that they come put your power back on. Or as they say out in the country, the current. Some of y'all might call it that. So anyway, back in 2003 is when I bought a generator. It's a large generator. It won't power the whole house, but it was enough to do the fridge. And back then we had a well pump, and we had to actually back feed through the panel box the power from the generator and cut off your main switch in order to turn stuff on in your house. And so and when we moved into the new house here back in 2005, I had the panel box wired that way so I could plug my heavy duty plug from the generator into the panel box and then hit the breakers and just decide to turn on what we wanted to turn on. And we've had to do that once before, and it worked out fine. You get your ceiling fan, TV, charge your cell phones, fridge, that kind of stuff, and hot water heater, of course. Well, I was all ready to go this time around, and the power never went out, and I couldn't believe the power didn't go out at our house with the kind of winds we were getting. Here it is a couple of days later, and we've got friends who still don't have power on, that's going to lead me into having a discussion about generalized reciprocity here in a second. But I want to talk about the duct tape. I'm actually going to talk about the duct tape first. Wind's blowing really hard. It's getting kind of scary, getting to the point where, you're wondering if everything's going to hold. It was getting kind of scary, because the wind was blowing so hard, sustained. You know, trees already have gone down. There's a house around the corner from us that had a tree go right down and take off the whole front porch. And then there's one, I'm going on a bike ride later today to show my daughter some of the damage. We didn't have any trees at our house, but yet this large noise, was hearing it on the top of the house. I couldn't figure out what it was. I thought maybe something had blown up against the house and was flapping. So I got my raincoat on and went outside and absolutely got drenched. You know, water got inside my raincoat. It was coming down so hard and with the wind, and I couldn't tell what it was. And so I came back in the house and I heard it again. It was really, really loud. And turns out it was our skylight had become loose and was flapping on top of the house. Now, if you don't know what a skylight is, most people probably do, but if for some reason you're from a part of the world and you don't, all it is basically a plastic window on top of your house that, you know, is secured, so, and it's sealed so water doesn't come in, and it allows natural light in. We have three of them on the back of the house, and they work really good because it gives us a lot of light over our eating area. Well, one of them had become loose, and so what I did, and it was my daughter that actually found that out, because she saw it flapping. She was at the top of the steps when she saw it flapping, and that's when she told me what it was, and that's when I started getting really worried, because I could see it moving at that point, and I knew it would easily blow off the house. And then you have this, I don't know, I guess the 3 by 2 feet by 3 feet hole in the top of your house. And I could not get up there to fix it in a hurricane. The thought did cross my mind to get up there and screw holes into it. What I was dealing with was the steepest part of the roof, pouring down rain, and no, that wasn't going to happen. So we didn't do that. So I came in the house, and we brought some tarps in from the garage and moved some furniture out of the way in case the water started coming in. And just kind of resolved ourselves to having to deal with this if the time came. So I'm sitting there watching the weather, you know, the Weather Channel and Fox News and CNN and flipping back and forth just to get the best radar pictures. And I'm thinking there's got to be a way to fasten that thing on the inside. And so I thought all of a sudden, you know what? I've taped my feet with duct tape before. Certainly I can tape a skylight with duct tape. Well, the trick is taping it from the inside. You can't really get a grip. You're not... A skylight is kind of like a shoebox. The shoebox lid, the way those edges form over the frame, that's how the skylight fastens to the house. And then there are screws that go along the side to fasten it. And I could see, because I climbed up on the back of the house and peeked over the top roof part, and I could tell that several of those had come out, and that thing was going to blow away if some more came out. So I brought the ladder in. You know, I'm getting soaking wet going in and out of the house, getting these damn tarps, getting the ladder, get my roll of duct tape, and I just commenced to taping the inside of the skylight and up in the frame like crazy. I mean, lots of duct tape. And, you know, kept trying to think the best way to fasten something on the inside. And I did all this before the news people said we were getting the worst part of the storm. So I sat down, and of course we were getting these major gusts again, and would you believe the thing quit rattling, and it never blew off. And now we got beautiful weather out there, and we got to find somebody to come fix it. I think I'm a little scared to get up there and try to fix that myself, even in the dry conditions, because that part of the roof is just a little too steep for me. And you know, you only get one chance. If you go off the gutter, it's way too high up. It'd be a goner, that's for sure. Or at the very least, I wouldn't be able to run for a while because probably would break my legs. So we'll have to get that fixed. But anyway, duct tape definitely saved our asses, no doubt. All right, let's talk a little bit about generalized reciprocity, and otherwise known as paying it forward. I had the opportunity over the last couple days to help some people out, and I'm not patting myself on the back, but what I'm doing is I want to share this with the listeners because it might inspire you to try to do something similar. There's nothing better than helping out your fellow humans. Nothing better than that. What I do for a living is basically based in helping other people, and I can make a living doing that. And I'm talking about this generator thing. I did not need my generator. And we went to church yesterday morning, went to Mass on Sunday morning, and saw a friend there who did not have their power and basically was, you know, up the creek without a paddle. And it's funny because they live near a creek. You know, I bought this generator back in 2003. I test it monthly. You know, I run it for 10, 15 minutes every month. Don't really use it. It's not the kind that is easily put in the back of a vehicle to, you know, go take somewhere because it's so heavy. I do have it on a dolly so I can move it around and test it. But it's, you know, not one of these little Honda generators that you can pick up with one hand and it's portable. So it doesn't get a whole lot of use. Well, when I found out that my friends needed it, I pretty much decided that's what I was going to do. I was going to make sure that they had this. And so they were able to save their food in the fridge. They were able to watch some TV, power up their cell phones, use the computer, you know, just by running extension cords. And then their power came back, and I was able to take that generator over to another friend's house who was trying to save food from their freezer. And they were able to save all that stuff too. Because some of the folks that don't have power a couple blocks away from us have been told Thursday. So that's 5 days that they're not going to have it since when it went out. And I know that feeling. Now, when I talk about the reciprocity part and, you know, paying it forward, back in 2003, I had a friend that extended some kindnesses, some very kind, kindnesses, was very kind to my family when we didn't have power. And because the generator didn't power the whole house, it didn't power a well pump at the time. I didn't have it backfed yet. So you might have to run a box fan. You might be able to turn your light on if you got it plugged into the extension cord, but you can't run your well pump because you can't just plug that in. You know, that's electric. If you don't have electricity and you have a well, then you don't have water unless you have a way to power it up. So, but this person, and actually his name is Tom, it's not Tom Grant, it's another Tom, there's nothing I could do to help this guy out, to do anything for him, because he can fix anything. He's probably saved me $20,000 over the years telling me how to fix things or coming over and fixing them himself. Plenty of times I've bought supplies and he's just fix the stuff because that's what he likes to do. Plumbing, electrical. He's the one that actually wired my panel box for me. You know, how do you return a favor? And that's what we do. You know, somebody does something nice to you, you do something nice back to them. But it doesn't have to be immediate. You know, that's what friends do. Friends do nice things for each other to make other people feel good, because then you feel good when you make other people feel good. Well, that's part of the golden rule, right? Treat others how you want to be treated. So, you know, how do you pay back someone, or not, you know, not dollar for dollar or minute for minute, but, you know, how do you return the favor to somebody who is kind of lopsidedly helped you out big time? Well, you can pay it forward. And that's the concept of generalized reciprocity, is that it's an informal, like, gift giving for which there's no accounts that are kept, and there's no immediate or specific return expected from the other person. It's just you do something nice because, you know, in the long run somebody else will hook you up because they know you're a nice person, and people will do nice stuff for you if you do nice stuff for them. And that's why my generator gets farmed out if I don't need it, because I know that if I try to help out other people as much as I can, when the day comes where I need some help and I don't have the resources to help myself, that someone's going to come help me. And I don't do it for that reason, but you kind of do in a way, because if you don't ever do anything nice for anybody and people think you're an asshole, then why is somebody going to come help you out, you know, when you need it? And that's really kind of what the bottom line is. You know, if you want to be treated right, you treat other people right. If you have something that can help somebody else out, you know, you help them out. And that's what I've done over the last couple of days. And frankly, it's nice to know that the generator's getting some use, because, you know, God knows it cost me enough. And hopefully it won't get stolen. All right, well, anyway, that's the, that's just kind of my opinion on that. It makes me feel good when I can make things a little bit easier for other people. And I know, you know, that pays back dividends in the future when you need help, and other people will come help you. So it's kind of an investment in a way. I don't expect to get free stuff, but, you know, if you help other people out when they need it, you know, they're a little bit more inspired to come help you out when you need the help, and you're not able to do everything for yourself. So that doesn't really have much to do with running, but anyway, that's kind of what we're dealing with now is figuring out, you know, a new home for this generator. It's a big generator. It takes two people to get out of the car, and it can only run two extension cords from it, but you can plug in a lot of stuff off of those. Okay, that's about it for the show, matter of fact. I'm kind of running short on time because I want to do the email bag section of the show. Next episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about some... I didn't even get into my Star Trek quotes. I'm going to get into those in the next show. I know I said that at the beginning of this show. I was going to talk a little bit about Star Trek and how that... there's some good quotes that I wrote down when I was watching Star Trek Next Generation the other day that I'm going to share with the listeners. If you don't know what Star Trek is, you're missing out on a major piece of American culture, that's for sure. Okay, let's get into the email bag section of the show and see who checked in this week. All right, got several emails, and I'm going to run through these a little quicker than usual just because the show is running a little bit late. Normally I would take a little bit more time with emails, but I heard from Christina from the Lazy Bones Running blog, and she got to meet Ryan Hall recently at the Runner's Den in Phoenix and got a picture taken with him, and you can check that out over at her blog at lazybonesrunning.blogspot.com or some variation of that. She's got a pretty good blog, keeps it updated, and there's a good, I just checked it, and she's got a good list right there on the face page, or the front page. She's got a good list of the runner things, you know, some funny anecdotes. She also, Christina, you mentioned in your email that you follow a company in Ashland, and had heard that there might be 1 to 2 weeks of no power while they restored power. Yeah, that is true. We have power, but some of our neighbors don't, just as close as a block away. We must be really lucky this time. I think this is payback for when I didn't have power for 10 days back in 2003 and suffered through that. This is my gift for making that sacrifice. But anyway, what's the name of that company that you follow in Ashland? I'm sure I'm familiar with it. I also heard from Tim over at abuelorunns.com, and he had a couple ultra questions. One was, what's your longest run prior to the 50K? Do you follow a specific training plan? And what about tapering? I responded to him by email, but I'll share this with the other listeners. I look at the 50K as just a real long marathon. So with that in mind, my longest training run before I did a 50K, I think, was 22 miles. And I followed a program that you can find on the Santa Clarita Runners website in California, where you can actually put in your date of your race, and it'll give you a mileage training program. I just pretty much do, you know, whatever's listed. I'll modify it the best I can, but it's all based on the double long run sandwich, which is the double long run, Saturday long run, Sunday long run, sandwiched by rest days on Friday and Monday. That's kind of the backbone of the training program. And for ultras, is to teach yourself to run on depleted glycogen stores. Or actually, you can't run if you're depleted, but on very low glycogen for the following day. Learning to run on tired legs. Also, with the tapering, I think a 2-week taper is pretty standard and is enough for the 50K. So hopefully that answers that, and you can check out his blog at abuelorunns.com. That's abuelorunns.com, and I will link each site that I'm mentioning here. I will link at ashlanddave.podbean.com in under this episode, which is 137. I heard from Richard out of Woodlands, Texas, original listener. He said he really enjoyed the episode on the 5-hour marathons because that's where he kind of the sub 5-hour marathon. That's where he falls in. And Rich usually runs the Dallas Marathon, but he's passing on that this year in order to run the inaugural Woodlands Marathon, which is going to be on March 3rd of 2012. And Richard, I really applaud that because I always think you should somehow be involved in your hometown races. I probably should get more involved in the Richmond Marathon than I do, but you know, I don't really live in Richmond. I live in Ashland, and I'm always involved one way or the other in every running event in Ashland, whether it's volunteering or, with the exception of, I think, two 5Ks, I'm always either volunteering or running. because I just think it's good to support running in your community. So well done on that, and I'm anxious to hear how that all works out. So that's March 3rd, the inaugural Woodlands Marathon in the Woodlands, Texas. Heard from Rich out of Virginia Beach through the website, ashlanddave.podbean.com. He's gearing up for the Rock and Roll Half, which is coming up Labor Day weekend. Wish you all the best on that, Rich, and I'm glad that you started listening to the podcast. It's always nice to hear from you. Also heard from Chris from the runningafterdaylight.com blog, and he also hit ashlanddave.podbean.com, commented on the site. He's gearing up for the North Face Atlanta/Pine Mountain 50-miler. That's the weekend of October 15th, 16th. Actually, North Face lists this as an Atlanta, North Face Atlanta, but Pine Mountain is anything but Atlanta. It's south of Atlanta on the other side. And Chris straightened that out sometime back by saying it's definitely not Atlanta, even though North Face advertises that race as Atlanta. I guess it's just to show people that it's in major cities, but it's actually in Pine Mountain, and that's the one that I helped my bud Rodney with last year. So all the best to that on that, Chris. That's coming up, a month and a half away about. Also heard from Randy out of North Georgia, and he wanted to let me know about the inaugural Georgia Jewel 100, which is on the Georgia Pinhoti Trail. There's 100-mile, 50-mile, and 35-mile options. That is September 24th and 25th. I'll also link to that race on my site. It's in the Chattahoochee National Forest, which is near Gainesville, which I looked up is northeast of Atlanta. Apparently has some very scenic mountain ridges. So thanks for the information on that, Randy. Thanks for listening to the show. I appreciate it. Also heard from Tom, and I want to read Tom's comment verbatim because I don't want to leave anything out. This is Tom Grant's, one of my local running friends here, his perspective on running the sub-5-hour marathon. Here it is, and I quote, "Here is my opinion on marathon times. Everyone's relationship with the marathon is personal. If it is not, then you're missing something. Each marathon brings different conditions, different courses, different training situations, etc. Each marathon finishes something special. Finishing with a friend or spouse brings a different but equally great sense of satisfaction. Struggling through to the finish line on a bad day brings us a sense of self-accomplishment, although maybe not immediately. It makes you tougher. Struggling through heat floods, sub-zero temps all bring a different sense of personal satisfaction." And on a side note here, I know about the floods and the sub-zero temps, Tom. I know exactly what you're talking about. Anyway, Tom, he continues, "I get a little misty-eyed watching the Biggest Loser contestants finish the marathon at the end of the season. I know their pain probably a lot more than mine in getting to the finish line. Comparing marathon times is like comparing your kids. You shouldn't do it." And Tom's new tagline is the marathon, it's personal. Now, the reason I wanted to read that is because I didn't want to paraphrase what he said. Everybody has a different experience finishing the marathon, and you know, it's the course, I've said this before, it's the great equalizer. It's the course is the same for everyone, but everyone has a different experience getting to the finish line. And I think that's just why it's such a great event. So Tom, I couldn't agree with you more, except for the Biggest Loser. I don't know why, if those people should really be running a marathon, from being obese to running a marathon. Is that safe? I don't know. And let's see, heard from Mandy, and unfortunately I just don't have enough time in the show this week before this event to totally promote it because of the timing of my podcast, but she's supporting an effort on September 11th, that weekend, and it's, you can go to the website teamrwb.com, which is teamredwhiteandblue.com, where efforts are being made for ultra marathons to be run in three separate communities on 9/11, and that's New York City, Washington, D.C., in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. And if you don't know this, actually Arlington is where the Pentagon was. But if you don't know the significance of those three places, then you've definitely had your head up your ass for the last 10 years. That's where we were attacked. Anyway, I don't have time to do it justice in this show to promote that and talk about it more because I'm running short on time. But if you're interested in that, go, and she's doing all that herself, go to that site, teamrwb.com, and I'll put that at ashlanddave.podme.com. And sorry, but Manny, I couldn't get that out earlier. I just couldn't get the show out earlier. I just had too much going on. Also, and last but not least, heard from Bruce, who's an original listener, who looks at me as an old friend because he's been listening to the podcast for so long. So, Bruce, I appreciate that. When you get comments like that, that's the reason I put the show together, is just share information and hopefully help people get through their training runs. Okay, well, we ran a little bit long this week. That's it. That's the show. I'll have another one out in 2 weeks, hopefully less, but generally 2 weeks. And I'm going to talk a little bit more in that next show about overcoaching, because I was looking at my notes and I realized I forgot to mention a few things. One is that sometimes some of these events where they have training teams, the event turns into the training team's event. And I don't know, I'll just share some thoughts on that. I'm sure there'll be people that'll disagree. And then I'll get into some of those Star Trek motivational quotes. Who would know that Star Trek could be so inspiring? All right, we all have a good week. And this is Ashland Dave. I'm running in the center of the universe, reminding you to run to the finish and keep on running. And don't forget to hug your kids. Mm-hmm.